Blog Talk Radio.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. No ass to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't. Tell them this, tell them this, tell them this.
No way, no matter what.
Stuff that I've been thinking about. A lot of research has been going on in my office. Just craziness with Obama signing that bill, the HR 399. We're going to have to talk about that next week in depth. I think that's going to be like a two-week show because there's so much that people don't understand what the bill entails and all that stuff. But I can't get into that right now. I got to keep focused. But a lot of research has been going on today, y'all. Monsanto, I mean, this company has been, listen, I just want to say to my fans out there, to my listeners, listen, we've got to be more involved, y'all. Got to be more involved. There was a petition. I'll put this out. There was a petition that was signed. Over 200 people, 200,000 people signed the petition so President Obama would not sign this bill. And once again, I am not an Obama hater personally of his character. What I am a hater about is his policies. His policies do not reflect what he said he was going to do for the public. And so this is my ordeal. So like I said, I'm not going to weigh myself or boggle myself down about this, because that's something we can talk about in the next few weeks, because like I said, it's a lot of information to put out there, and I'm not going to minimize it because it is something that we need to really look at in depth. Okay, so you know what we do. Okay, I just had to get that out. Okay, so you can find me at Facebook, you know, soundoffforum.com. You can find me at george.mango.904 at Facebook. You can also email me at soundoff97413@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at #soundoff97413. You can also go to my website, which is soundoffforums.com. And let's get this party a rolling. We always do the Ephesians. So we're going to do it tonight, Ephesians 6, 6 through 12. The King James Version. Not with eye service as man pleases, but as a servant of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether it be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same thing unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master is also in heaven. Neither is this their respect of the persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the whole power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle against flesh and blood, not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, powers, against rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickednesses of high places. And wherefore take on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand within the evil day, and having all to done to stand. And let the church say amen. That's how we do it on the forums. This is how we're going to do it, and we're going to kick it. Right now, we're going to kick it up a notch. So without any further ado, I'm not going to even give you an intro into it. I'm just going to go on and play it.
And give you 30 seconds, and we'll talk more about that later, to ask whatever you want to ask or to make your statement. And we'll give you more details about that as we move to that part of the conversation. Today's conversation is really about, as I said earlier, an African-American agenda, whether or not there ought to be one, how it is that we engage one and advance one, that is to say, an African-American agenda, in the era of Obama. How do we advance an African-American agenda in the era of Obama? And how do we do that in what many are calling a post-racial America? What about a black agenda in the era of Obama in a so-called post-racial America? I'm joined at this table by a number of distinguished Americans. I'll introduce them as we get to them in this conversation. But it's important for me to say at the top of this conversation that everything said around this table, and I hope when you get involved, everything said in this room will be rooted in love. That everything said at this table and everything, y'all didn't clap loud enough on that. Everything will be rooted in love. As a matter of fact, I want to make sure that love is so central to this dialogue. As a matter of fact, hold on.
Okay.
We're going to keep love at the center of this conversation all day today. I don't need to say much more because it's not about me, it's about the conversation. I want to jump right into it. I want to start, though, with defining some terms, which I think is important. Because over the last couple of weeks, last few weeks, since making the announcement about this conversation here at Chicago State, about this black agenda, I've received mail from all kinds of Americans who think that the very notion, Dr. Dyson, the very notion of a black agenda is reductionist, it's pejorative, it's exclusionary, it's racist, it's divisive. So we have to start, it seems to me, with defining the terms here. So let me come to you first. When we talk about a black agenda, what do we mean by that?
Well, I want to thank you, first of all, Tavis, for convening us here today in only a style that you are capable of doing, and we celebrate your genius and your bravery. When I think about the black agenda, I think about the history of this country. That is to say that at its origins, a notion of universal democracy was put forth as the predicate for constituting a new nation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, and admit men, are created equal. In that universal conception, all men, given a patriarchal society and the way in which all was signified by male, there were many people excluded. Women were excluded, slaves were excluded, people of color were excluded, First Nation people were excluded, of course, slaves were excluded. So as the nation began to take shape and articulate its own self-understanding, what it felt democracy to be, what it felt justice to be, what it felt was the righteous path to take, people of color who were African slaves were systematically excluded from the larger circle of American privilege. So how do you reconcile, on the one hand, the expression of a document that celebrates the universal freedom of human beings and exclude folk on the other hand? Black leadership steps into the gap to try to articulate the grievances of exclusion of African American people from that larger circle of American privilege. And they began to defend the gains that are necessary to close the gap between the ideal and the reality. So from the very beginning, black leadership is about reinterpreting the fundamental premises of American democracy so that the ideals after which they aim can be embodied and the noble goals that they articulate can be lived up to. It is not, as you said, a pejorative and exclusionary practice to talk about a black agenda. The black agenda responds to the already excluded principles by which black people have been kept out. Now, the question is, in this particular era, as we evolve, we think about the fact that during slavery, we had black leaders who expressed our grievances and talked about our gains and talked about our group identity. We did that during Reconstruction. We did that during Jim Crow law and legal segregation. We did that during the height of the Civil Rights Movement. We did that during the 70s when there was a white backlash. And we must do that now in this so-called post-racial era. A black agenda is nothing more than the possibility of African-American people being included in American democratic experimentation without hindrance or limitation or encumbrances, number one. Number two, what's very important to say, we are not un-American, we are ultimate Americans. We express our ultimate patriotism by being able to love the country. It was James Baldwin who said, "I love this country more than any nation on the earth, which is why I reserve the right to criticize her perpetually." So my point is, a black agenda is about making America live up to its best and noble ideas and to express the ways in which African American people have been excluded and how we must now be included in that. And then finally, often we have been rejected into America. We have been seen as the litmus test for what is authentically American only after we have defined what is not American. A lot of people did not see Martin Luther King Jr. as a hero. A lot of people did not see W.E.B. Du Bois as a hero. A lot of people didn't even see Nellie Helen Burroughs as a hero, or Fannie Lou Hamer, or Ella Baker. These are people who had the temerity, the unabashed gall, to stand up against America and say, "No, you ain't doing it right. What you call America is not America. What we think is America is what you said. Dr. King said the night before he died, be true to what you said on paper. Black leadership expresses a black agenda that wants America to become better and more noble in its aspirations, but at the same time pay attention to those who have been excluded. So when I think black agenda, I think of even in the age of Obama. Mr. Obama is an extraordinary human being who was a great president, potentially. We love him. We think he's a marvelous human being. But at the same time, a black agenda is not qualified or surrendered because Mr. Obama is in the White House. Mr. Obama is the chief executive of the United States of America. He has a right to exercise his vision about what should happen. We as black leaders, black intellectuals, black critics, black public servants are here to defend a black agenda that may ironically be even more viciously assaulted when we have a black face on an American empire that has been historically insensitive to the cause and claims of black people. So when I see black agenda, I say let's articulate what we need at this particular point in this post-racial era. And I'll end by saying this. I don't believe in a post-racial moment. I think we should have a post-racist moment. We should not look beyond the reality of race. We should look beyond the reality of racism. Black agendas are about America. When America is made best, black people stand up and articulate our visions, our dreams, our aspirations, our sentiments. We love Mr. Obama. We recognize he is a president. We must have prophets who tell the truth, and that's what we're doing here today.
As you all know, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, professor at Georgetown, prolific author. Please welcome now from Princeton, Dr. Cornel West. Dr. West, Dr. Dyson advances beautifully and brilliantly this conversation about the black agenda. We're gonna methodically build this thing over time, the next 4 hours here. But again, I want to stay with the definition of these terms. And so when so many black folk, in deference to, depending on one's perspective, in deference to, in defense of, in love of our President Barack Obama, say that, pardon my English, he ain't the president of black America. He's the president of all of America. If any one of us has heard that refrain, let's keep it real. We have all heard, many of us have uttered that refrain, that he's not the president of black America, Dr. West. He's the president of all America, and then they use that statement to go on and to justify whatever argument they want to make coming behind that. Let's just put this on the table right now in love and address it. What about this notion that he's not the president of black America, he's the president of all of America?
First, I just want to say it's a blessing to be here. It's always a joy to talk about loving black people. We got to start with that notion. Black people are worthy of being loved, and when you love folk, you hate the fact that they're being treated unfairly. You loathe the fact that they're not living lives of decency. I salute you, though, brother. And like Brother Flager, I want to acknowledge, anytime I talk or think of a black agenda, I think of Frederick Douglass, I think of Ella Baker, I think of A. Philip Randolph, I think of Martin King, I think of Malcolm X. What was it about all of them that they loved black people enough that they were willing to live and die for black people? They began with black folk on the chocolate side, and it spilled over to vanilla sides and red reservations and brown barrios and yellow slices. But it started with mama and daddy. It started with grandmama and went on with the Jamal and Letitia. Now, so when I hear Brother Obama say he's president of all America, I say absolutely, and I am glad that you are. But one, black people helped make you president of all of America. And you come out of a tradition of a people that said we love the least of these, the poor, the orphan, the widow, the fatherless, the motherless. And we acknowledge that anytime you talk about black folk in America, you're talking about a state of emergency, especially for black poor and working people. So that when you talk about love, you're making it a priority to say, America, keep track of the prison industrial complex, keep track of the dilapidated housing, keep track of the disgraceful school systems, keep track of the unemployment rates and underemployment rates and unavailable health care, child care. That is what it means to talk about a black agenda. Now, what does that mean? That means that the black agenda has always been the best agenda for the nation. The best agenda for the nation. You turn to the fourth chapter of the great W.B. Du Bois's 1924 book, The Gift of Black Folk, and he talks about how black people emancipated democracy because we began with a constitution that was a pro-slavery document for 75 years. And we needed to emancipate white supremacist democracy into a multiracial democracy, and same was true with Jim Crow and Jane Crow. So the black agenda has always been the best agenda for the nation because it emancipated democracy, reconstructed freedom, so that the least of these would be at the center or near the center of what it means to talk about public interest and common good. And in the age of Obama, there's a lot of confusion. Because to have a black face in a high place easily leads us to forget so many folks stuck in the basement of the house. And we get obsessed with the breaking through at the top, and we forget about the least of these. So we put pressure on our brother, loving pressure, but we already see that any president is under tremendous pressure from the strong, the corporate elites, Wall Street oligarchs, various powerful folk at the top, and can easily push Obama in such a way that he tilts too much toward the strong and doesn't focus the way he ought on the weak, on the poor, on working people. That's why we're here today. And I would want to add this too, that we don't have to ask permission from anybody to talk about black suffering and black social misery. We love who we want to love. And we love other folk whether they love us or not. That's what Martin Luther King was all about.
So that raises, in my mind, Angela Glover Blackwell from Policy Link. Please welcome Angela. That raises, Angela, in my mind, this question. Again, we're going to try to get all these questions out that we've been talking about in the barbershops and beauty salons and all the emails I've been getting from folk all across the country for the last couple of years. We're going to put all this stuff in love on the table today. And one of the questions that we get asked all the time, that I get asked all the time, Tavis, why are you just talking? Another conversation. Every year on C-SPAN, you're talking. Negro, you ain't done nothing. You ain't put nothing out. All you're doing is talking. I've heard that from everybody, not everybody, but a lot of folk, as you can imagine, across this country. My answer has been that before Barack Obama was even in the United States Senate, much less running for the White House, these conversations resulted in a document called The Covenant with Black America. And that book laid out a 10-point agenda to which we were going to hold everybody accountable when we got to 2008 who wanted to be president. We didn't know who was going to be in the race. Again, President Obama was not on the national scene. He was not a United States Senator at that time. So it was never about singling out, demonizing, casting aspersion on him or anybody else, because the field had not yet been determined when we came together to put together this covenant with Black America. You were there. Policy Link was instrumental in putting that book together. Let's go back a few years. Again, before we were in the era of Obama, and talk about this covenant with Black America agenda that laid out these 10 issues that mattered most to black folk, and what we were going to do about it, and how we were going to hold folk accountable once we got to 2008. So back me up a few years.
So happy to be here, and so happy that you have asked me about the covenant. Because as we're thinking about this question of do we need a black agenda, I want to remind everybody that we have a black agenda. We have a black agenda, and that process of putting together the covenant was so much the way I think it always has to be if you're serious. Whenever my staff says to me, we're going to a meeting, I say, what's the agenda? When they say we're having a meeting, I say, let's put together an agenda. And the agenda is the starting point, but just putting together the agenda doesn't solve the problem. You have to really dig down each one of the items on the agenda. How are we going to move it forward? What does it mean? What's underneath it? What's going to be the plan? And that's what we did when we put together the Covenant with Black America. We took the big issues, like health, but we did a drill down and said, but what will it mean in our communities? How do we deal with the disparities? How do people even get into the situation we're in? What's happening in their environments is leading to asthma and obesity and heart disease. So we talked about health, and we ended up talking about the absence of grocery stores. So that we developed an agenda and we did a drill down. We did the same thing when we talked about communities, urban communities. What's the urban agenda? It's about more than public housing. We talked about affordable housing and the fact that in America, where you live is a proxy for opportunity. It determines everything, and we explained that. These kinds of issues allowed us to be able to say, we know the areas where we have to focus, and then we looked at the data. Where are we? Where do we need to get to? That gap is what we addressed. How do we fill the gap? And we filled it with policy ideas. We took those policy ideas and we talked not only about what our elected officials needed to do, but we talked about what we needed to do. And so when you talk about an agenda, if all you want to do is put together an agenda, don't come, don't show up, because it's a waste of time. You put together an agenda to be able to lead to some change and achieve something. I want to suggest that we have fallen down, because not only did we do, here's the covenant with Black America, we said, here's the covenant in action. This is how you make it real. And when I go back and I look at the covenant in action and I think about all the suggestions we made to the country about how we could make it real, we haven't done it. And so not only do I want to see us advance the agenda, I want to see us take it apart, disaggregate all those pieces, and ask, what do we want to hold others accountable for, and what do we want to be held accountable for? Just one thing I want to add, because we've mentioned President Obama. I've spent so much time in Washington working with the new president, and I have been amazed at how in this freeway of access, a freeway of access that brings us tea parties and brings us all kinds of opportunities for people to say whatever they want, he has been able to stay in the progressive lane. He's been able to stay in the progressive lane. And in that progressive lane, I have seen the covenant with Black America go through each one and be able to check off extraordinary things that are happening because this president gets it. And when I talk about the president getting it, people say, well, what about everything that's not happening? My response is, I can walk and chew gum at the same time. I can be a friendly critic at the same time that I can praise progress that's being made, and we all need to learn to do that. As we go forward in this conversation, I'll add more specificity, but the main point to remember is we have an agenda, but we haven't done our part to realize that agenda.
I should remind folks, since we're at this grand institution, Chicago State, on the south side of Chicago, that Covenant with Black America book, all the proceeds, all the profits from that book stayed right here on the south side of Chicago with Third World Press. They published that book, and all the profits and proceeds went to the oldest Black publishing company in this country right here on the south side of Chicago. Please welcome from the Rainbow Push Coalition, the Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, Sr.
Thank you.
Reverend Jackson, Angela suggests, she doesn't suggest, she says very clearly, that we had an agenda and we fell down. It's clear to me, and I think to most of us around this table and in this room, that Black folk, again, we're going to put all this stuff on the table in truth and in love, Black folk were asked to do a lot of things to help elect this president. We were asked by the candidate and his campaign. We were asked by Black leaders to do any number of things to help get Barack Obama elected as our president. We were asked to walk precincts. We were asked to give money. We were asked to hold teas and coffees in our homes. We were asked to show up at rallies. We were asked to do a lot of things to help to activate our organizations. Black churches were asked to do any number of things. All of us in Black America were asked to do things to help elect this president. One of the things that's troubling, for me at least, and I want to get your take on this, is, to Angela's point, what Black folk have been asked to do since Barack Obama was elected president. Because if we're not being asked by Black leaders, if we're not being asked by Black organizations, if we're not being asked by the president we elected to get behind him to do A, B, C, D, and E to help him advance an African-American agenda, then it seems to me that all the energy, all the effort, all the resources that we know we have, because we activated it to get him elected, those resources are now sitting dormant. So talk to me about what we have been asked to do or not to do, as it were, since he's been elected president of the United States.
Well, let me express my thanks to you for convening our family together again. The good news is that the president sets a high moral bar. So I want to represent all of America. That's a big deal. Most presidents have made that commitment. They represented white male Americans, and then after the fight, female Americans, and then labor Americans, and then Native Americans. And so the idea of a one big tent America is a new deal. Within that context, there are some Americans living in luxury and some living in pain. And that must, if your hand is cut today, a finger is cut, you don't wrap the four that's not bleeding, you wrap the one that's bleeding. And so our pain today, even as we deal with the health care challenge, and it is a real challenge, that in Chicago, 3,200 black Americans die a year from health disparity. In this, more die a year in this city from health care disparity than in the 9/11 terrorist attack 10 years ago. Obviously, those in the most pain must have some priority attention. Let's go a step further. Today, our black Americans, while we're number one in football, basketball, baseball, golf, tennis, track, and presidential politics, we're number one in infant mortality. We're number one in short life expectancy by 7 years. Number one in home foreclosures. Number one in church foreclosures. Number one in student loan defaults. Number one in credit card scams. And so we need heavy lifting at the bottom of this economy up. I want to stay a little close to your first one about kind of who are we, because the very term black in the context of America takes on a kind of electricity. The term black makes people overreact. Tomorrow, there is a rally in Washington. 100,000 Latinos are marching for comprehensive immigration reform and bilingual education. Of course they want that. That is, within a multicultural arrangement, each of the member groups have primary agendas and they have common agendas. And so tomorrow they'll march for a comprehensive immigration reform, and the White House is deliberating how it handles that agenda. The don't ask, don't tell was the gay lesbian agenda, and that has been addressed. The issue about the bank bailout. We demonstrate they use lobbyists. And then lobbyists say, if we fail, America will fail. And so we bail them out. And that was a good thing, perhaps, but it was not linked to lending. It was not linked to reinvestment. It was not linked to honoring civil rights law. So the banks got the bailout, didn't honor fair lending laws, didn't honor fair housing laws, did not honor comprehensive, did not honor CPA, did not honor affirmative action laws. So these banks, watch this, engaged in something called reverse redlining. They broke the law without any penalty for breaking the law. The same day that the president addressed the matter of Dr. Gates and Crowley on the issue of an incident that took on the media firestorm, that same day, Lisa Madigan, the attorney general, had a press conference in Chicago filing a lawsuit against a bank that got bailout, but the bank did not lend. That bank targeted blacks and Latino people on South and West Side Chicago. Blacks and browns making $100,000 a year got subprime high-cost loans. Whites making $50,000 a year got low-cost prime loans. The fact is it did not help white or black, because at the end of the day, when we begin to face foreclosure, since every time one house is in foreclosure, nine houses lose value, we were evicted and couldn't pay taxes. They won the war, and the house was worth more than they were paying for it. So guess what? We began to lose police and teachers and firemen and librarians. In some real sense, the black agenda is the American agenda. That's why I like the idea of his being America's president. One, most American presidents have not been America's president. And so deal with the members of that family and based upon priorities and pain. I would say lastly that the black agenda is the humane agenda. It is the lost sheep agenda. It is the democratic agenda. It's the healing agenda. It's the offset the hypocrisy agenda. The idea that some people are three-fifths of a human being and that blessed by churches and politics and scholars, and others were seven-fifths. They taught some people to be superior and conditioned others to be inferior. Our struggle was a struggle to even the playing field. Why are we so dominant in football, basketball? But it's hard to be the best basketball player in the world. It's hard to be the best. But the reality is that there's something now going on called March Madness basketball. We dominate. But May sadness at graduation time. What is the disparity here? Why are we so good on the court and so weak off the court? Because why are we so good? Whenever the playing field is even and the rules are public and the goals are clear and the referee is fair, we can make it. But when you look at where we are today, the rules beyond the playing field are not fair. So the black agenda really is America's. And I might add in closing, Dr. Ron, is that our agenda has never been the left agenda. It's always been the moral center. The 13th Amendment in slavery and indentured servitude, it was the moral agenda. The 54 decision pulled down walls for all locked behind both sides of an artificial wall made by law and culture. The Voting Rights Act of 65 was not just the black agenda driven by blacks, but guess what? White women couldn't serve on juries. Farmers who couldn't pay for the poll tax couldn't vote. 18-year-olds couldn't vote. You couldn't vote residentially where you went to college. We had to democratize democracy and have proportionality. And so I would say to you that the black agenda is the moral center agenda. That in slavery time, if the right said, treat them as you want to, they are your property. The left wing said, be kind to them. That's the left. Our agenda was end that system. We must end the system of oppression. And I say to you today that the black agenda is winning. From ending slavery, to ending legal Jim Crow, to the right to vote, to electing a president. Our agenda, the moral agenda, is marching on. We are a better nation because of our morally centered. Our agenda is good for the healing of America. Our agenda has never been excluded. Our agenda is the canary in the mine. We've always been that force that has been good for America's redemption, and we remain in that coveted moral position.
Reverend Jesse Jackson. Please welcome from George Mason University, Professor Michael Fauntroy. Please welcome Michael. Michael, I want to stay. I'm so glad that Reverend Jackson helps us historically situate what the black agenda has meant to this country. And I love his clear and concise statement that the black agenda is winning in America. The black agenda has always been good for America, and it's still, in 2010, winning for America. That said, if we're going to continue winning, there is a role that all of us who are on the team have to play. So I want to stay with this question about what black folk were asked to do to elect the president and what we have not been asked to do to use that same agency, that same power, that same strength, that same intellect. We have not been called upon by black leaders or black institutions or, frankly, by this president to engage this black agenda that Angela mentioned earlier that we've always had. Talk to me about what we are not being asked to do to exercise our agency.
Well, the first thing I would say is we aren't accepting the fact that we have a responsibility to play a role in that. Everybody in this room, everybody who's watching us on Ustream and C-SPAN and WYCC and everybody who's going to see this that's sent to their friends on Facebook, don't seem to understand that we have a responsibility that has to be played after Election Day. You can't vote change at the top of a ticket and think the job is done. Okay? We're going to have elections this fall. And if the turnout is what it is historically in off-year elections, the movement that all of us at this table are interested in and the movement that the people in this room are interested in is going to be in serious jeopardy. because we don't often understand that when you vote change at the top of the ticket, you have to continue to vote change all the way down to the grassroots. Okay. So that's the first thing. We all have to accept that we have a responsibility in that. You mentioned we haven't been asked to do it. Well, you know, we often do things that we haven't been asked to do. And I would say this is one of the things that we need to be focused on. So for me, we need to focus our attention on continuing this effort to seek change and understand where we fit in all of this. You know, the question here is about a black agenda, and Reverend Jackson mentioned that it's electric. You know, people get antsy when they hear the term black agenda. But for me, and for me, the issue is as much about the agenda as it is about the black part. And I want people to focus on the agenda. I teach my students all the time that, you know, the agenda setting process is about trying to get those in decision-making positions to pay attention to issues. But it's also about keeping negative and harmful things off the agenda. And for years, people who are interested in the kinds of things that those of us at this table are interested in have been stoned, roadblocked, and seen our attempts to get things on the agenda thwarted. So we have to show up on elections. We have to make sure that our agenda items are addressed and respected, and we do that by continuing to put pressure on elected officials from the top all the way down to the bottom to make sure that if it's education, income, healthcare, housing, justice, whatever the issue is, that the elected officials know that we are paying attention. You know, listen, I'm a bit skeptical in some respects because I fear that too many of us are just happy that we have a black president. You know, I mean, just be real for a second. I'm not sure that a lot of us are prepared to ask this president and this Congress to do what we as American citizens, and by the way, we are American citizens, have a right to petition the government to do. And let me just put this in some additional context. From my perspective, special problems require special solutions. And if you don't think we now live in a circumstance in which we have special problems, just think about what's going on 90 minutes north of here in Milwaukee, where in late 2008, the black male unemployment rate was nearly 50%. In my city, Washington, D.C., a city which has done reasonably well in this overall economic recession, the black male unemployment rate between ages of 16 and 24 is 35%. Now, I'm sure that numbers exist like that in all of the major cities in this country in which black and brown people live. That strikes me as a special problem. When Wall Street stood up and said, we have a special problem, we fell over ourselves to give them billions and billions of dollars. And we're still paying, by the way. And so if Wall Street can identify a special problem that needs to be resolved, then why can't we?
That raises, though, as always, Michael Fontrez sets me up nicely to go to one of the nation's leading economists and the president of Bennett College for Women. Please welcome Dr. Julianne Malvo.
Because
we've known each other for so long, I know telepathically you know what I'm about to ask. Based upon what Michael just said, here's the question, but let me put it out for those who telepathically aren't with us in this moment. The question is this: if special problems demand special attention, if disproportionate pain requires a disproportionate response, then why not focus with a laser on the economic challenges that black America is facing? As we all know, again, in love, but in truth, at the center of the table, I didn't say it, but he said it a number of times. When asked this very question that Michael Fontroy has raised, President Obama's been asked this question a few times in press conferences about black unemployment. His answer has been consistent, that a rising tide will lift all boats, number one. And number two, we're going to have to get whatever we get out of the stimulus. Those have been his two answers. Somebody rescue me if I'm wrong, but those have been his two answers. A rising tide will lift all boats, number one, and stimulus, number two. How's that answer working for black folk?
Well, first of all, Tavis, let me thank you for this gathering, for bringing all of us together, putting us around this table. I think the synergy is really important, and we're very pleased at the work you're doing. Secondly, and of course, always, I bring greetings from Bennett College for Women, the oasis where we educate and celebrate women and develop them into 21st century leaders and global thinkers. Thirdly, I want to give all props to Brother Wayne Watson here at Chicago State as a fellow HBCU president. We were just together with NAFIO's conference. We were both testifying on the Hill about the viability of our historically black colleges and universities. I want to thank all of you who do support our historically black colleges and universities because we are your future. We are your future. And then, Tavis, let me say that this conversation about a black agenda is very productive here, but I've been very puzzled by the people who suggest or assert that there's no room for a black agenda. There has always been room for an anti-black agenda. Let me cite an 1831 law in North Carolina that said to teach a slave to read is to excite dissatisfaction to the detriment of the general population. This particular law then goes on to say that if you do teach a slave to read and you're black, you can be beaten, whipped up to 40 times, a white person fined $200. Now, $218.31 was several years' income. So this is how dangerous our knowledge is. But somebody had temerity to write down to teach a slave to read. So this is an anti-black agenda. David Walker's appeal, talk about a black agenda. David Walker, 1834, consistently pleading for the freedom of slaves. If you were found in the state of Louisiana with a copy of David Walker's appeal, you could be jailed, you could be killed. And so don't tell me about a black agenda when we know about an anti-black agenda. And so it is just a natural outgrowth of the advocates like the Ida B. Wells and others that we should sit around this table and talk about that which is ours and that which we need. We're talking about social and economic justice. We're talking about the inconsistencies of President Obama this week signing, and we're glad he did sign, an $18 billion jobs bill, but about 2 years ago it was a $700 billion bank bailout. So basically the people at the bottom got like, what, 3% of what the people at the top got? Think about it. So you can bail banks out, but you can't put people back to work. There is a disproportionality, an extreme disproportionality in the economic situation of African-American people right now. Most recently, released data on wealth. Average white family has wealth of $170,000. Average black family, $27,000. Well, let's break it even further. Single mothers have a median wealth of $5. $5. Sister Blackwell, can you imagine? $5. This is quantifiable data. Assets are access. So we do not have assets or access in this society. The unemployment data are nothing more than fiction. 9.7% overall translates into 15.8% in our community, but that 9.7% is acknowledged to be 16-some percent for the overall population. For black folks, then, our 15.8 is 28.7%, more than one in four black people. And Brother Fauntroy, last month, white male unemployment went down, but black male unemployment went up. Last month, just 1 month ago, white male unemployment situation improved. Black male unemployment situation got worse. We have seen targeting in public policy in the past. Targeting is a tried and true tactic. We could have programs. You don't have to call them black. You can call them urban if you want to. But why not call them black? As Reverend Jackson says, if your hand, I mean, you don't put a sling on your whole arm because your finger is broken. You know, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And so let's look at what is happening, what the long-term consequences are. Because let me tell you, I live these consequences every day. 2 in 5 of our young people graduating from college do not have employment. 2 in 5 of them. So they come to school, they get these loans, they follow the rules, they do their work, and then they cannot find jobs because the jobs are not there, because some of them are competing with 50-year-olds who are now going into entry jobs because the jobs are not there. So we have a case for special pleading. And I don't want to hear the word post-racial again in my life. You know, not again in my lifetime. You know, in the same month that President Obama was sworn in, a young black man named Oscar Grant in Oakland, California, was handcuffed and shot with his handcuffs on his knees, begging for his life. He was a brother that they called a peacemaker. He was trying to make peace on his knees with a handcuff, and they still shot him. So that's post-racial, if you will. In Mississippi, there are these two sisters, the Scott sisters. Yes. They are incarcerated for something like 15 years for like stealing $9 worth of something. One of the women is had kidney dialysis. They will not let her out. She's been in jail like 10 years. This is really, that's post-racial for you. So we don't need to use these words to cover up the fact that we do not have an American existence as an aggregate group of people. Our existence is different. We have higher foreclosure rates, higher unemployment rates, everything else. And so let's call it real. I could not be more delighted. I think everyone around this table echoes our collective delight that the agenda has been so moved that we have an African-American man in the White House, and we celebrate him every day. And given all these crazy people in these United States, we also pray for him very regularly. But at the same time, what we must do is understand that Dr. King's dream was not that we had a black man in the White House. The dream was that we have, he said, I have the audacity to believe that people everywhere can have three meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their mind, peace and freedom for their spirits. Not one black man in the White House. So let us applaud this brother, but continue to do our work. We must close these social and economic gaps.
I want to ask you a follow-up right quick. I want to ask you a quick follow-up because I glance to the right of me, and I see that Michael Fonto has a copy of this study in front of him. I know this study well because I've been reading it, and those of us who read these studies as well. If the camera can get a shot of this, this is a cover. Michael's holding it up. I don't know what camera he's on, but it's a shot of the cover of the report. While they're figuring that out, it's the Kirwan Institute study. The Kirwan Institute study, it's K-I-R-W-A-N, for those who want to follow this. The Kirwan Institute on Race at The Ohio State University. As you know, Dr. Mabel, just put out a study recently that takes a real hard look at the stimulus package passed 1 year ago. So if the answer to black folk is, I'm the president of all of America, and the stimulus is what we're going to put forward to help all of America to lift all these boats, the Kirwan study says that joblessness in black America has not been impacted by the stimulus, that black-owned businesses have not gotten contracts as a result of the stimulus, these shovel-ready projects. This isn't me. This is the Kirwan study. And that the federal response to housing, black folk hit hardest when the housing bubble burst. The Kirwan study says that in housing, we've not been impacted by the stimulus. So if the answer from Washington is, Negroes, check out the stimulus, and Kirwan says the stimulus is not impacting black life in America, how do I read that?
Here's the thing with the stimulus. We had a set of systems that decided how money was divided that preceded the stimulus. So you throw money at the, and folks just do what they've been doing. And so were African-American-owned businesses getting their share before stimulus? No. So the stimulus has done nothing to change that. When you look at the unemployment situation, clearly, I laid that out earlier, we have not seen a targeting. But when stimulus money comes to states, many people think that's the best way to distribute it. I say distribute it to cities. Because when you distribute it to states, what states often do is use that money to absorb their deficit. Mm-hmm. So they say, well, we're going to use that for the deficit. But when you get it to cities, you get it to who? Black folks, brown folks, old folks, and young folks. Because cities are black or brown or older and younger than the rest of America. Mayors will put money. Mayors are riding around looking at the blight. They see the empty houses. They see the child care centers that have had to be closed. The libraries. How can you close libraries in an era of illiteracy? But you see libraries closed. But the mayors are the ones then who say, this is where to put the money. And so it seems to me that there has to be a different approach. It seems to me that legislatively, our Congressional Black Caucus and others have to insist that this money be fairly distributed. With the housing piece, Tavis, here's what went wrong there. We gave bankers money that they put in their pockets. They were supposed to lend that money. They were supposed to lend that money, but they didn't lend it. They kept it. And what we've seen, foreclosure rates in our community, double, triple. The number of black folks who have those subprime loans, half of them qualify for real loans, for good loans. But they're not getting them because, again, of targeting. This is why we can't go post-racial, and this is why it is required that we do the kind of policy analysis that we need to do. I mean, the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, Policy Link, other organizations have to systematically provide the kind of research that says this is not happening and this is what we need to do to make it happen. Let me say one last thing in closing. A. Philip Randolph went to Franklin Delano Roosevelt in World War II. When our people were not getting jobs in manufacturing, our people, our Tuskegee Airmen were being discriminated against, but we also weren't getting jobs. And he said, you better hook this up, or I'm going to bring this many people to Washington, D.C. to tell you something. FDR said, make me hook it up. Now, I don't know if FDR was being arrogant or evil, or if he just meant he needed to have somebody behind him to push him. So A. Philip came back and said, I got 100,000 Negroes getting ready to come visit you. And then he signed the executive order that allowed black folks to work in those segregated manufacturing plants. So what I would say, with all due respect to everyone, again, we need this president to succeed. Because if he does not, imagine how far back our agenda will be pushed. But we have to make this president pay attention to our community, just like A. Philip made FDR do it.
Please welcome Chicago's own Dorothy Wright Tilghman. Sister Dorothy, I come to you now following Dr. Malveaux's brilliant presentation on how we are faring or not, as it were, in this economy, what the stimulus is or is not doing, has or has not done for black life in America. I come to you because, in love, after sitting at this table, one of the questions it seems to me we have to earnestly wrestle with is how we do this when so many black folk think that to raise these issues is to hate on the president, to give him a hard time, to be unfair to him. He inherited all this stuff from Bush. He's got a lot on his plate. You hear these arguments. You're a former alderman. You're on the radio here in Chicago every day. You have wrestled with these issues. You knew Barack Obama before he first ran for office. You took him around Chicago, introduced him to people to help him get elected to the Illinois State Senate here. But this question is real. How do you have this kind of conversation? How do you raise these issues when people think, too many of our people think, that to raise these issues is hating on the president?
First of all, Tavis, let me thank you for this gathering. As I sit here, I think about when I was a little girl, and I remember when Rosa Parks refused to give her seat to a white man. And I remember the community talking about, she shouldn't have done that. Why are you doing that? Maybe I'm going to get involved. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll do this. But what if the community had not gotten behind Rosa Parks? What if she had not had that type of energy and that type of courage? That's what I think about when I think about what you've done here today, and I want to thank you for giving us an opportunity to speak. Dr. King said that we have to take the moral authority.
Talk closer to that mic. Get right on that mic. I want to hear you.
Okay. Dr. King said we'd take the moral authority. It's been 40 years since they murdered Dr. King.
Yes.
So we are wandering around in the wilderness, and it's time to come out. Now, I think that we have the responsibility to bring the question to the President of the United States.
All right, that was the first piece of this Black Agenda meeting that was held in Chicago by these black leaders. There's so much more that needs to be said, but we'll play that part tomorrow. This is a continuation of a question that I was asking yesterday. And it is, do we need to have a black agenda? What exactly is a black agenda? Where does that fit into America's pipeline of dreams, understanding, wanting to be happy, and is it going to even do anything? Because Tavis says this. He says, you know, people say, Tavis, all you do is talk. Year after year after year, you have these meetings and we're still talking. I think we have to be real with ourselves. I think we have to just, listen, we have to admit to ourselves, racism exists, we have a problem, we've got to destroy it one way or the other. I'm currently a part of several organizations in Wichita Falls. I understand there is a process that one must go in to in order to have a successful organization. And you definitely want to go in correct. You want to go in right. You want to have the proper documentation. You want to be prepared. But sometimes we just need some rebel rousing, you know, just mischief for no reason, just to do it. I mean, just to stir the pot. To get the people buzzing and talking. I mean, listen. I'm more of an action person. I really am. You tell me what needs to be done, I will do it to the best of my ability. If you don't like what I did, please tell me what you'd like me to fix, and I will try to fix it to the best of my ability with your guidance and yours. That's just me. I'm trying to get people to understand the more you put off for tomorrow, the more will pile up on your plate the next day. The more issues will come. There is no tomorrow. We're not promised tomorrow. We might not even wake up tomorrow. It is important that we as human beings tell the people what we want. They're going to come to you and say, okay, this is what you want. How are we going to get there? Then you return to them and say to them, and say this, well, I believe you hold the position to understand where we can make a difference. Because you can come up with funds to build airports. You can come up with funds to reroute a whole area. You can come up with funds to do things for a certain part of the time, but you cannot raise funds for a specific area because we've got to come up with an agenda. We've got to come up with the resources. Okay. So once again, I say to you, if you want to get elected, now I want my listeners to be, I know I've got listeners all over the United States. If you want to make a difference, you have to be together with a group of people telling them, if you want our vote, if you want to get elected, we will push for you to get elected. Once you get in office, we're not going to let off the pedal until we see change. If you think you will get elected again, you have to think again. You know, they're talking about President Obama in this thing, and of course these are our older nation leaders. But I am specifically speaking on currently now on what do we do at grassroots to get these people thinking. I am tired of looking at my city calendar and it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with minorities. I don't celebrate holidays. I don't. But the reality is this. I've heard this so many times in the city, it makes me sick. Well, we don't need February to be African-American History Month because we should celebrate it every day. Okay, got that. But you dummies, is this. I'm sorry for calling them dummies, but my frustration level was crazy. Is because how hard did these freedom fighters stand up to say that we wanted more than a week for African-American history? Okay, we got a month. What are they teaching our children? Martin Luther King, I've had a dream. That is it. Listen, there is more to black people than Martin Luther King. There is more to black people. How about teaching them about Africa? How about teaching them about the positive things that African Americans have done? Okay, this month is the salute to women, right? This is Women's Month. I have not seen anybody talk about what the woman, the American woman, has done for America. Women are the greatest human beings on this planet. They can create life. They can give birth. They are nurturers. They are lovers of humanity. They have a being of caring. Supersedes our manly perception of we have to be a man and be able to defend and protect our household, provide for our household. Listen, there's more to it than that, okay? Women are able to sustain without a man. We've seen it during the Depression time. Men would go to work, and they would go to another state, and they would send money back home. Next thing you know, they get a Dear John letter saying they're not coming back. They've already got a new family where they live. Women still sustain that. And so what the point is about this black agenda is not only is this black agenda important, it is important for the gay agenda. It is important for the Hispanic agenda. It is important for the women agenda. Now, in this age of everybody hating Obama, whatever, listen, I'm not a fan of Obama's policies either, okay? But my point is this. It is important that we come together and make a difference at the lowest level because we cannot make a difference at the federal level. We've already done that election. That election's already done, okay? But right now in the state of Texas, they are trying to decrease the number of credits that a high schooler will need in order to graduate. What sense does that make? It makes no sense. How can our young children, how can this next three generations of our children compete with the world? We won't be able to compete at all. Okay? I mentioned this last night. In order for us, my generation, in the next 20 to 30 years, we will be running this country. What will we contribute? What will we be known as? Will we be known as the generation that broke the cycle, or are we going to be the generation that did nothing once again? Because I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, the people who fought for liberties, who fought for the Constitution, who are steadfast and believe in justice and dignity and equality, those people will be dying soon. Those people will be retiring. And even from their deathbeds, they will be screaming for us to do something to make a difference. And everybody's got their own little programs that they're doing and stuff, and they're touching people. Okay, that's good. But what we got to do is we've got to do it on a grander scale. We've got to. Because I'm at the point in my life that I don't want to sit around and talk about racism anymore. I don't want to sit around and talk about America's dirty little secret about slavery. Okay, I'm tired of talking about women issues. I'm tired of talking about gay and lesbian issues. It is time for people to be equal. We've got a doctrine. We've got a doctrine that we are governed by. And our three branches of government fail either locally, state, or federal. They fail us. And what happens when that happens? We as the people feel let down. How are we the greatest nation in the world and we still are fighting over jobs, equality, and justice? When that doctrine came out, that was the basis of an American idea, right? And so we're now in 2013, and we're talking about jobs, equality, and justice for all. There's something wrong. There's something very wrong and broken. So when we talk about the black agenda is the agenda of America. Because now you think about the lifeline of America. Without slavery and slavery being the slippery slope or the dirty dark secret of the 13 colonies or the Civil War or the post-Civil War or World War I, World War II, okay, Vietnam War, the Korean War. Are we saying that the black agenda is not important? Because the 14th Amendment helped everybody. Now we're going to go in and we're going to try to revise it. It is so important that we look at who we are as a humanity, as a society, and decide where our country is going to go. Are you tired of the same BS day in and day out? You wake up and something tragic happens in the news, and they're trying to make us mad and upset about the government and all this stuff. Listen. The reason why people don't like government is because they are tired of hearing about all the bad things. We can jump up and down and be excited about President Obama being the first black president every day, all day. I'm not excited. Yeah, it's a milestone. Hooray. But when we are not making a difference at the lowest level and people are still scratching and trying to claw their way up to even have the basic necessities to live day to day, then it doesn't matter who sits in that seat. Now, I'm gonna do a little bypass on that. And the reason why I'm going to do a bypass is because I'm talking about this. President Obama does not even admit or accept or publicly said that he is black, okay? So for us to sit here and say, oh, I'm proud of President Obama because he's the first black president, being black and him not accepting or saying that he's proud to be black publicly is a slap in black people's face. So I'm not going to get excited about a president who doesn't want to accept his blackness. Simple as that. I mean, what are we thinking? We really think that's something to be proud of? Every president had to deal with slavery in some form or some fashion. Every president had to deal with black rights. So you're saying that President Obama don't have to deal with black rights? Okay. Most people will say, well, he is doing things for the blacks, for black people. Why do you think he's fighting for Obamacare? Why do you think he's doing that? Listen, no. I want him to – he publicly comes out and says, we're going to do this for the Latino people. We're going to come and we're going to do this for the gay and lesbian people. We're going to come out and do this for the Native Americans. Listen, what I want him to do is come out point blank and say, look, we're going to come out and we're going to do something for the black people. Okay? That's what I want to hear. it is important that you accept who you are as a person. Because if you don't know who you are as a person, then you, I mean, not what people say about you. You need to know in your core, through Jesus Christ, of who you are and what are you willing to do to stand in the name of Jesus. Because none of that stuff actually even matters. Because when your spirit is dead and gone from this planet, from this earthly realm, you're going to always have to answer to a higher power. Are you standing on a moral fiber ground? Listen, call in. I want to hear people's opinion. Call in 347-989-1014. That's area code 347-989-1014. Because, I mean, I can sit here and tell you my thoughts all day, every day. And my thoughts won't waver unless there was something good that somebody says. But the idea of the notion that we don't need a black agenda, it's simply just not okay with me. Because I can go into a store right now and scream the word nigger really loud, and I bet you people would be so uncomfortable. Why would they feel uncomfortable? When black people start talking about slavery and suffering, people freeze up. I have never, ever, 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 ever seen people just become pale-faced, their emotions change. It's something that they don't want to talk about. Well, sorry, if you're going to talk to me, we're going to talk about black suffering, okay? Because where I come from, the era I come from, listen, I am on fire because of the slow moving. It is 2013. I am 35 years old, and I'm still sitting here talking to my children about racism. And I don't want that watered down, lucre down stuff saying, well, people are changing. Oh, yeah, people are changing. They're changing the strategies in making it overt racism, institutional racism. And what do you got to do? Oh, you got to go and you got to peel through the layers. Oh, well, he didn't really mean this and he didn't really mean. Okay, well, a lot of people really didn't mean to do a lot of different things. But you've got to understand this. When you say something, you better mean it. You have to mean what you say or nobody's going to take you serious. So now they talk about President Obama's destroying the country. But nobody said nothing when President Bush was killing all these Americans. And yes, he did kill Americans. How did he kill Americans? He sent us to two wars that we had nothing to do with. We're still in Afghanistan and Iraq for what reason? Saddam Hussein is dead. Bin Laden is dead. The Taliban is everywhere, right? We don't even know who the Taliban is anymore. They got new names from the insurgent, the terrorists. Listen, we've got terrorists down in Georgia and in Texas and in Alabama and Mississippi right now burning crosses every weekend talking about white power. We got terrorists in the United States government right now killing people who get in the way. We've got terrorists on the streets right now called police. Now, George, you're coming strong with this. Listen, in my years of life, I didn't have to mess with the police. Never got in trouble with the police. I don't have no ought against the police. But let me tell you what, my brothers and sisters that have had them on in with the police, are they being protected? They don't even feel. They don't even feel. They don't even. You ask a child right now, are you afraid? You ask a black majority, or you ask a minority child if they feel safe when the police come around. They'll tell you no. You ask a white child that, they will say yes. You know why? Because the difference is when white cops or policemen drive around in the suburbs, they don't ask questions to the white kids. But they'll stop a black kid who's walking around in a neighborhood talking about, do you live here? Well, sir, that is none of your business. I've been stopped 5 times because I got a new car. And from one of my friends told me is that the car that I got is namely a black vehicle that police view as a drug car. I got a beautiful car. Now, when they see my driver's license, I have my I don't cut my hair. My hair is long, and back then it was in braids. I had some cornrows. It looked like I was a thug. Now everybody know who I am. No, I am not a thug. Not even close. Okay. So when you look at my picture, I look thuggish. Then the police ask me, what do you do for a living? And I tell them, matter of fact, when they stop me, it's at nighttime. And what do? I go and put on my shades because they light is deep in my eyeballs. I put on my shades. And then they go say, it was kind of dark for you to be wearing shades. And I said, that light's pretty bright. I am a retired veteran, and bright lights hurt my eyes. So you're going to turn off that bright light and I take off my glasses, or you're going to leave the light on and I keep my glasses on. Simple as that. Then they got the nerve to ask me what I do for a living. Chief, I just told you I'm medically retired from the military. I got a military ID on me. It's my day in your face. What else do you need? Now, I ask you, my ladies and gentlemen, is that harassment? So, as they go on and talk, Miss Dorothy Tillman from Chicago, she was talking, and I think tomorrow I'm going to start off with her speaking again, because Miss Dorothy Tillman, I mean, she's from Chicago. She says that they walked at nighttime with Dr. Martin Luther King at nighttime so they could conquer the fear of darkness. Let me explain this to you. The reason why she said that is because the Klan or white folk would go into black communities or black areas, neighborhoods, and pull people out of their house at nighttime, lynch them and kill them. Now, you ask me, George, that's not true. Okay, believe what you want. When slavery was abolished, there were at least 3 killings or lynchings a night of black people. People had either their house burned, their church burned, or they were brutally murdered and tortured. There is no documentation in history of a race of people who continuously was tortured, who was disfranchised, who was unemployed, who had their homes burnt, who had their possessions taken from them, their children uneducated. In the history of the world, mind you, and you ask black people to forget and to forgive. When our own government does not give us the opportunities or the tools. You see, a lot of white folks say, well, black people are handed this all the time. No, black people are not handed things. I don't know where you get this concept that black people are handed things, because that's not true. First of all, they got to stand in a line maybe 2 to 3 hours to even get to the window. When they get to the window, they're turned away because they don't have the proper documentation. Then they've got to reschedule and do it the next day or the next week or the following. So all these federal programs that you say are out there for these black people, they don't exist anymore, white folk. They don't exist. So the next time a white person says something like that, I want you to tell them to tell you what documentation, what law was signed, when it was signed, and what does that act do for black folk. Because in the state of Oklahoma, affirmative action has been outlawed. So when we talk about affirmative action, not every state has it. Just like, anyway. So when are we going to get a grasp of understanding that racism is not only a physical thing, but a psychological thing? You see, because the generation of the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, those people who are now 40, now that are 50 and 60, you see, now they are running this country. Those are the black folks that are scared. They have put a stronghold of fear and defeat in their heart. And when you talk about fear and defeat, we're talking about going to people and saying to them, can you please help us? Listen, we should not be begging for handouts. We've got enough capital. We've got $1 trillion worth of capital, of black capital. We can put together and we can do it ourselves. But, you know, everybody's about themselves and, you know, what you could have done, you know, what you could have done, what you should have done. It's all about being successful. It's all about making that money. That illusion. What will money buy you? Money won't buy you too much. It won't buy you freedom. It won't buy you respect. Clarence Thomas is the only black man sitting in the Supreme Court right now. Surrounded. Surrounded by white folk. Look at President Obama's cabinet. Surrounded by white folk. What do black people have to do? What do they have to do in order to have just a complete black show? Huh? I think that we have to analyze, not start over, because we've already started over. We've already been reset. Because when it comes to being reset, you got to think about what resetting is. Because you're already in this program, you're in a pause state, you hit the reset button, that means you start over again. Listen, once you reset, start from scratch. We don't need to reset. We need to push forward and build on what we have. There are tons of black people out there who've served in the military who have the opportunity or have the ability to help lead this revolution. That's what I'm calling it. I didn't say rebel. I said revolution. Because there's a difference between rebelling and having a revolution. Now, most people would say I would disagree, but when we want justice, when we want to be heard, what happened to the Americans? The Americans were fighting the British War for what? They want to be acknowledged. They want to be heard. Okay, now let's talk about being a rebel. Well, a rebel is you just don't agree with whatever what's going on, and you don't want to be part of that faction or whatever. Now, we can go definition by definition. I can look it up for you. You can go, but what I'm saying is it is time for a regime change in America. A new ideology that the top 1% cannot make all the decisions for us Americans. A lot of people will tell me, George Beverly, you are out of your mind. There's a lot of people who agree with me. That's the crazy thing. There's a lot of people that would agree with me and say we should do that, but they're too scared to do something about it. It's gonna come, y'all. It's coming. It's coming. It's time to shake the tree. Okay? There's gonna be some good fruit that fall, and there's gonna be some bad fruit that's gonna fall. But I cannot stand by no longer. I can't stand by no longer. See, y'all gonna either be for me or against me. For me or against me. With the Lord or against the Lord. Hey, I'm waiting for those. For those people who really, really, really know what it is to stand up. I'm waiting for those people who really got the gumption and the understanding to show the reality of love. And I'm not talking about that old, you know, silliness. I'm talking about being real. Are you real? Because there's a lot of people who say they're gonna do a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of people who don't. You see, I like taking my time and marinating on the words, marinating on the thoughts of reality. Because I know that the Lord will provide for me. And if you're scared, you need to just say you're scared. That's okay. That's okay to say you're scared. Not everybody is called to stand up. But don't stand in our way. We don't need Judas. We don't need a Judas. Okay? We don't need a Judas. We don't need no Phillips. We don't need no Nathans. We need some Peters and we need some Pauls. You need to go in and read your Bible, okay? Because y'all need to know where you draw your strength from. Y'all drawing some bad ideas of how life is supposed to be. And if you think that you're not a coward, I'm going to say this to be real with you. If you don't think that you are not a coward, then you stand up for justice. You stand up for what's right. When you're in your office, somebody say something that's wrong, stand up for it immediately. Because I don't want to hear it. I'm George Beverly, sign off forums. Good night.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. No ass to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't. Tell them this, tell them this, tell them this.
No matter what.
Beautiful thing, and it's the truth.